Good evening, folks. This is January 11th, 2018. It's Thursday, and it's 9 p.m. Eastern, and it's time for the Committee of Safety call.
Well, happy New Year, everybody. I hope you all had a good holiday. It's cold as bejesus up here in the Chicagoland area, so we're all bundled up. When I last checked, we were in Article 4, the full faith and credit, and I'm pretty sure we went over that, but I did want to go down to Article 4, Section 4, and I wanted to go over that a little bit because it is relevant to some of the stuff that's about to happen. And Article 4, Section 4 just consists of one clause, and it's basically talking about it's provided that the federal government shall guarantee a republican form of government to all states, providing courts of justice under the law of land. So it reads, Section 4 reads, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion, and on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. If you understand what that says, it is pretty clear, and we should all be aware of this, that, again, the sovereign states are the employers. Central government, a.k.a. federal government, is the employee. It works for the state employers. And as such, we should always seek redress, not from the federal government, not from the federal courts, but from our state, because it's our state's responsibility to guarantee us that republican form of government. And the reason for that is right there in the Constitution, because it says the federal government must guarantee it, and so therefore the states must do so as well. It's in the Constitution. A little further down the road is that the state, as in Illinois, for example, if we add it together, we had enough committees of safety to move enough people in the state to move the legislature, we could request assistance from the other states and or the central government, a.k.a. federal government, to deal with invasion or insurrection. And, of course, we are suffering from both invasion, as in all of this illegal immigrant stuff and U.N. troops, and the foreign corporate officials and the bar associations and all public agencies, as well as insurrection because of their actions warring against the Constitution. So by the rules, the state of Illinois can request assistance from the other states to deal with this problem and or from the federal government. And this is why it is so important that we get our committees of safety, and we start at the county level, and once we have our counties in sufficient numbers, we can petition our state. We can get our state, and our state can go to the other states and ask for assistance. We don't have to go to the federal government, the central government, for assistance. We can ask the other states. They are bound to come to our aid. And everybody misses this point. And that is why it is so important that we take back our counties, because all politics is local. You have to start at the county level. And then, of course, then we move up to the state level. Now, I bring this all up because I remind you that the plan is unfolding. The greatest thing in history is unfolding in our faces as we speak. And we have been told repeatedly And until I know otherwise, I will maintain that the White Hats will take care of everybody from the very top down to governor. That's being handled. Now, I know of one exception in particular, but it's a unique exception, and that would be the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Rambo Emanuel, who with his brother Ari are Khazarian Mafia, our Church of Satanists, our mass murderers. Brother Ari is a bad man for the cabal, and they are high-value targets. And I am told they're on a first-cut list. So to the best of my knowledge, that's the only public official below governor that I'm aware of that's going to be taken down by the White Hats. But from the governor on down, lieutenant governor on down to your local dog catcher, and every frickin' buddy in between is your problem, my problem. We're the ones that are supposed to take care of business. And in the event that we are having trouble or are overwhelmed, it's going to be much easier to clean up South Dakota than it is Illinois. South Dakota can certainly be called on to give us some help in Illinois. And that's my point. That's what I'm trying to make clear to you. That is all part of not only the Articles of Confederation, but also in the Constitution. And we have that all in writing, and they are all bound. And South Dakota is obligated. It is bound. It is their duty. It is their requirement. If we ask them to send in their National Guard or their Air Force or their emergency services guys or their militias or whomever, I don't care, throw in the grandmothers with pots and pans. If we make that request to help them root out our county, to root out our state-level crap, they are required to do so. And so I want to plant that seed in everybody's heads so they understand the mechanics of what that clause means. And a lot of times people read that and think, well, the state is going to go ask the federal government for help. Well, that's kind of stupid. Because the state is the employer. The federal government is the employee. We already control the federal government. Now, you and I both know in a practical sense things have gone so awry that unless we have 100,000 lawful guns, that's not going to happen. But as the transition continues to unfold in our faces, you're going to see this sea change of attitude. We were talking about this last night on our committee of state, on our tri-state call. Look, you and I both know. If you're waiting for a miracle, you got a case in court, you know, and you're waiting for that miracle, or I just talked with some people out of Illinois, you know, how come they got to arrest some judges and a district attorney in Cook County. Yeah? You come up with 10,000 lawful guns, I'll get her done tomorrow. And even after transition, immediately thereafter, it's not going to be so easy until we root out at the state and the county level all of the bad judges and the bad public officials. It's not going to be like these guys are just going to roll over and snap through immediately, because we're not going to take back control of the courts yet. It's not going to happen right away. I don't care how much you say it. It sounds good when you say it fast. It's going to be a fair amount of time down the road. And I'm thinking that big inroads would be made maybe 7-8 months down the road, maybe. But this is the thing that I want you to remember. This is the thing that I want you to focus on, is that there will be an incredible sea change of attitude within the corrupt courts, within the corrupt judges, within the corrupt district attorneys, within the local magistrate judges, because they know the transition has been successful. Now, we have already seen this in operation. It's already happened. And I pat all of you on the back because we all had a hand in making that happen. That was the Bundy trial. We already did this. We were the sea change of attitude. We were the ones who put the pressure on the powers that be. We are the ones that intimidated that judge and everybody above her and beyond her and laterally around her from there all the way to Washington through the BLM, the FBI, I don't care, name it, ABC agency. We affected that sea change. And our NLA paperwork was crucial to that. We've been hammering them for years, calling them on it, telling them what they were doing, trying to educate them, and then holding them accountable because they didn't pay attention. That's the sea change attitude that I'm talking about. And we've already seen it because that Bundy's walked out the door the other day. And that's why that case is going to have the sea change ripple effect in your court cases immediately tomorrow. Now, I'm not saying they're going to roll over and lighten up on you completely, but you're going to see our members making a lot more progress in their court cases from here on in, and it's going to continue to snowball. And that was the point that I wanted to make. So I have now belabored that point, and I am done. So we're going to shift now into Article 5,
John?
Article 6. And yeah. Article 7, go ahead.
I just want to add, on the comment section of the Committees of Safety, if you go down to, not you necessarily, but if the people want to even go a little bit further into how powerful the wording is in some of these documents, take the time to go down to talking points and resources for your library, and click on Lesson 3. Lesson 3, the Articles of Confederation, and John had mentioned that, and you'll see that states were, the word states, this is from the 1785 Johnson's Dictionary, this word was not in the 1755 Johnson's Dictionary, but in the 1785, now this is started when they started playing their games, states is defined as nobility. That is the only definition for states in that Johnson's 1785 dictionary. In the 1830 dictionary, it is the same. States means nobility. It's not in the 1755 one. That's the language they were speaking when these founding documents were authored. However, when you go to that particular link, you will see that on the left-hand side of that 1785 paper that I have kind of posted there, not a paper necessarily, but the art or the definitions out of that particular dictionary, 1785 dictionary, you'll see on the left-hand side that a state, S-T-A-T-E with the small letter S, is a republic, a government, not monarchy. And as you can see, they went ahead, if it's states, it's nobility that has the authority. Okay, the monarchs. I yield.
Okay, thank you for that. Which actually brings me up to something else I was thinking of earlier. And I'm trying to find it. Just give me a moment here, but it had to do with oaths. Oh, my gosh, I can't find it. But basically, the section that I'm looking for, and I'm going to get in deep now, and I'm not going to start to push. I'm going to stop pussyfooting around this subject. It says that all public officials have to take an oath to the Constitution. All public officials. That's, I can't find it, but that's what it says, and that's what I'm thinking about right now. And I have mentioned this over and over and over and over again. And I'm not going to pussyfoot around it in 2018. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say that the people that were born under whatever you want to call it, the Articles of Confederation, under the colonies, under the states, under the federal constitution. Nowhere, nowhere does it say that just because you were born here makes you a citizen of anything. Nowhere. And nowhere does it say in the Constitution anything about people taking an oath or affirmation to their country. Now, I can tell you that the Organization of American States, the Law of Nations, which has been governing the laws of all sovereign countries on the planet since the mid-1700s, and in the U.S. statutes and codes, it says that you have to take an oath or affirmation. Now, there's some statutory chicanery involved about, quote, being born into something, and I'm not going to get into that now, because that's a deep discussion for advanced classes. I'm not going to enter into an entry-level discussion on that. My point is that it is required on every country in the planet, and has for hundreds of years, that if nothing else, when you reach the age of reason, you must take an oath or an affirmation to something. Now, if you want to be a member of France, take an oath or an affirmation of France. If you want to be a member of Sweden, do it to Sweden. If you want to do it to the United States Incorporation, then do it to that. If you want to do that to the Republic of the United States of America, you can do that. I want to bring this up so that you are aware that this is going to happen and be required of every person that wishes to remain in the restored republic. You are going to be, just like they did in the colonies, if you were a member of Massachusetts, you had to take an oath or an affirmation to Massachusetts, or Virginia, or New York, or Pennsylvania, or whatever, South Carolina. You were required to take an oath or affirmation. Now, some people will say that they are a member of their state. No, you're not. And you can't be, because currently, at best, your state is dormant. It is sleeping. Now, the beauty of the fraud that has been used against us is they didn't kill, the dark side didn't kill anything. They didn't kill the Constitution. They didn't kill common law. They didn't kill the sovereign state. They just frickin' worked around it and ignored it. So it's sleeping. It's not dead. But in order to be a member of your state in the manner with which I understand things, and I think this is absolutely irrefutable, is that you have to have standing. And this is where all organizations have gone wrong, save one. And you have to have standing. And in order to have standing, for example, in the state of Illinois, or Illinois, the state would be more appropriate, you have to have chain of title to the organic constitution. And you have to have chain of title to the General Post Office of Illinois, the state. Now, this has been part of the Law of Nations for centuries. This is not up for debate. This is how a sovereign nation or a sovereign, well, let's just use that term. It's not really the one that I want to use. Country would be better. Or a sovereign union would be appropriate. There's the word I'm looking for. To be recognized internationally, you had to have your, quote, constitution and your general post office. And that was all because of the Universal Postal Union. If you did not have that, you were not recognized as an international sovereign entity, be that a country or, in our case, a union. And this is why our founding fathers did the Articles of Confederation, which was sufficient enough, and then the Constitution showed up later. But in between all of that, Ben Franklin was hot to trot on getting the General Post Office going. And it's actually, if you really know how the game is played, the General Postmaster out of Pennsylvania is actually the biggest dog on the block. And that all had to do with the law of nations and recognizing the sovereignty of entities, of countries or unions. So I get back to the state. Can everybody hear me? It sounds like everybody went dead. Are you there?
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay. I never know when I'm being cut off. So, all right. So now I'm going to bring this discussion back to the state. In Illinois, in order to become a citizen of the state, which is what this discussion is here, then the first thing that you need to do, and which no organization has done at the national level or at the state level, is have standing. Yeah, it sounds great if you see it, say it fast, blah, 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 blah. This really pisses me off. So in order to do Illinois, the first thing that need be done is to get chain of title to the Constitution. And the next thing is chain of title to the General Post Office. And once you have those two documents, you actually have resurrected the sovereign state of Illinois. And once you've done that, then you've got to you've got to recreate the government because it doesn't exist. And once you've done that, then you've got to have some rules and regulations like bylaws or articles of incorporation, some set of rules or guidelines or bylines that you're going to follow for people be giving an oath or affirmation to Illinois, the state. If you do all of that, then you can lawfully claim yourself as a citizen of Illinois, the state. And nobody anywhere has done that. Nobody. That you have all kinds of war. I know there's probably three or four organizations in Illinois. They claim to be the common law government, and they've got their common law this and their common law government that. They don't have standing. Nobody recognizes it according to the law of nations. And if it isn't recognized by the law of nations, this is the planet we live on. This is the rule book that we play by. Nobody gives you a flying patootie of any notice. And this is something that is going to be very important in 2018. And so when we talk about being a citizen of a state, you have to do this. Now, I'll even tell you how this has been done already. That discussion I'm not going to get into at the moment. But I will tell you the mechanics of how this has already been done. And it's a very common procedure. It's called first in right, first in time. It's ancient. It's 1,000 years old, thousands of years old. And the analogy that I use is you're walking down the beach and you find a beach ball and you bring that beach ball home and you run a legal ad in the newspaper for 3 weeks in your county where legal ads notices are run and said, I found your beach ball on February the 1st, 2016, at 8:10 p.m. at Sunset Beach. If you want it, come and get it. And after 3 weeks, if no one comes to claim it, by law, it is now your beach ball. And no one else can come back and get it. That's called first in right, first in time. So the thing to do in the state of Illinois is to take out a legal ad in Springfield, in one of the local papers in Springfield, that says, hey, I found the organic constitution of the state of Illinois from 1833. Did anybody lose it? If you did, contact me at such and such a place. If after 3 weeks, or whatever your state delineation is in such matters, that becomes your property if nobody comes to get it. If there's no rebuttal, if there's no claim, that is first in right, first in time. And that's the first thing you do in Illinois. That's how you reclaim the organic constitution. And, of course, you go and do the same thing for the General Post Office. Once you have those two documents, First and Right, First and Time, the Organic Constitution of Illinois and the original General Post Office for Illinois, the state, then you can start to put things together that have standing. This is one of the things that riles the crap out of me about some of these other individuals out there, and I'm going to name one in specific because I've caught her in lies. I've got her in her own handwriting and lies, and she is a liar, and that is Anna Von Reitz. And all the crap that is spewed from her lips, and I could talk to you in great detail about her for hours, that comes out of her sounds good when you say it fast. I'm a common law Alaska state judge. Well, in your own little dream world, you probably are. Whatever the definition of your dream world is, then you're a judge. But it has no standing on the world scale. You have absolutely no standing anywhere at any time for any reason. And I bring this up tonight because this is incredibly important in restoring our republic. Because as I stated earlier, we're going to be required to take care of everything from the governor on down. And that includes restoring the sovereignty of our organic constitutions. And this is the process by which it has to be done. And if anybody tells you any different, smack them in the shins with a baseball bat and never talk to them again. And so I just can't tell you how important this is and how much it burns, you know, of a burr under my saddle it is. And I will be talking about this more as things develop throughout time, but that's all I want to spend on that for this evening. So now we're going to shift over to Article 5 on the amendment process, and Article 6, the supreme law of the land, and Article 7, the ratification. So this is Chapter 7 in our course, if you're following along our course. Article 7 consists of one clause. One provided two processes for amendments to the Constitution, and one of Congress, and the other directly of the states or the people. So there's basically two ways that we can amend the Constitution. So Article 5 reads, and I quote, Section 1, the Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment, which may be made prior to the year 1808, shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article, and that no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So that last part simply means everybody gets a vote. What's my place? I'm working off of my tablet. So you've got a process by which you can use the Congress or the states. And the states have probably the more powerful standing with which to do this. And again, that just gets back to what I had said a little earlier about the fact that the states are the employers and the central government is the employee. And so the trick then becomes, it says that the legislatures of the states are the ones that actually do the organizing. So you have to, you know, we all understand the politics of things. So where, again, my concern is, where, again, does it allow us as we the people, and as people with a small p, get a chance to do an amendment? Well, we're left to go through our legislatures in our states is the actual answer. And we don't really have, and the way things are at the moment in particular, is that we have even less of an influence on Congress. And so I will tell you that over the last year or two, I have been absolutely adamantly opposed, in fact, openly hostile to anyone or anything that wishes to call a constitutional convention or to propose an amendment. I will guarantee you with 100% certainty, I will bet you $1,000 silver out right here, right now, that every proposal for an amendment, every proposal for a constitutional convention has its origins in the bad guys over the last 24 months. I'll bet you $1,000 right now, and I'll take your money. And so I have been absolutely opposed to anything along those lines over the last couple of years. So, but that's just me. So, but I did want to point that out because I am have some very strong opinions on that. Okay, but that's fairly well, there's a lot that, Chris Ann Hall spends a lot of time talking about that section. And, you know, the methods with which constitutional convention is called, but we're not going to get into that right now. But you get the idea. Either the Congress can make a proposal or the states can make a proposal. Either one of those can lead to an amendment. And, in fact, it has in the past. So I'm moving on to Article 6. And Article 6 consists of three clauses. Clause 1 provides for contracts prior to the Constitution, one of Nikki's favorites. Section 2 provides for the supremacy in the Constitution, a.k.a. the Supremacy Clause, where this Constitution and the laws of the United States pursuant to the Constitution are the supreme law of the land. All judges are bound by the Supremacy Clause. Any state constitution or state that contradicts the laws of the land is null and void. Which brings me up to a little experience I had today. I'm not going to mention a gentleman's name, but he's running a third-party candidacy for the state of Illinois. And as I have done religiously with anyone running for any office anywhere in the country, as I have told them, I make them an offer. I said, if you write an affidavit and sign it and notarize it that says that you support common law as the supreme law of the land above everything else, above all else, you support common law grand juries, you support common law courts of record, you support the Bill of Prohibitions or the Bill of Rights, and you support the Articles of Confederation, then I will take that to our membership within the National Liberty Alliance, and I will suggest that our membership in your jurisdiction consider voting for you. And that's been a standing offer for years. And I will tell you, this is the second time this has happened. And I got a hostile response today, an absolutely hostile response. And I just pointed out to the gentleman, I said, well, you know, you try to dance around, but the bottom line is most people do not understand the kinds of things that we are learning in these calls. And I understand it. But if you've got a good heart and you're willing to learn, that's what we are. We're an educational assembly. We'll be more than happy to help you understand what you should know before you run for office. And then we can help you. We'd rather have somebody in office that understands all this stuff and knows that this is the year it all goes away. I am not interested in another candidate for office under the old paradigm. The old paradigm is dead. I'm going to make a couple of predictions here, and I was damn close on the last election. I'm not going to get into that, but I'm going to predict that there may not even be an election in November. And if there is an election in November, there will be no two-party Democrat-Republican system and or candidates running for election. That is my prediction for what is alleged to be the November 2018 election. So what I'm asking this guy for this simple affidavit, you would think, on our call anyway, would think it's a no-brainer that you simply, as a patriot, tell us that you support the Republic and the Constitution and the supreme law of the land. I mean, am I on a big stretch here? Is this really hard? Well, evidently it is for these people running for office. And this guy's a third-party candidate. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you because it is pertinent to what we're discussing now. Okay, so Article 6, Section 1 reads, all debts contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of this Constitution shall be as valid against the United States under this Constitution as under the Confederation. I can see Nikki's nails digging into her table, but I simply refer to that personally. And this is just my opinion, so take it with a grain of salt. I consider that to be that's the Rothschild's clause right there. And I'm not going to say any more than that.
if I can add another dimension to
I don't know if I want to let you loose on this one, but go ahead. Make
okay.
it quick.
Okay, well, the debts and contracts engagements entered into and everything that you're saying, I remind the people on the call that in Philadelphia were all these instruments of, founding documents penned, okay? And isn't it interesting that more than 2,000 years ago or about 2,000 years ago, it was penned, and to the messenger of the assembly in Philadelphia write, he who, and it goes on, all right? So in describing the pertinent points in that Revelation 3:7-13 scripture is really interesting when it talks about we have the keys. Binding and loosening, right? That's contract law. And it says that there are going to be people there points out that there are people there who, want to take over and take your crown. Your crown is your sovereignty. So that is all contract law. Once we know who we are, we'll be able to do a lot. Okay, and I yield, because this goes along with 4 as well. All right.
Right.
I yield.
Okay. Yeah. And just to wrap up, I call it the Rothschild clause, and for a reason. And the simple fact is, contracts are perfectly fine. And basically that clause, if you read it fast, is supposed to mean, well, if we had a debt before the revolution, we should pay that debt after the revolution. The problem with that is that the debts, the contracts, were all frauds to begin with. That's why I call it the Rothschilds section. Anyway, so
and
Article
another
science.
Thing, you brought up
Careful.
Another thing, okay? The Rothschilds, and a lot of people say that they are Jews, and that is also mentioned in that particular portion of scripture, where in Revelation 3. Anyway,
let's not go there.
I don't want to. I'm just bringing up. There are so many pertinent things in that particular verse or those verses.
Well,
and
that
I
is correct. Thank you, Nick. Section 2 reads: this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. Now, the interesting point, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Everybody gets that. It says what it says, and it doesn't say what it, let me finish, it doesn't say what it doesn't say. And, but the thing that I want to point out here is for those of you that are engaged right now in a court battle, and we had a gentleman that we talked to that's out west last night on our tri-state call, and of course, rule number, and he's getting hosed big time by the lower courts. And of course, as John DeRash has advocated from the very beginning of time, your best deal is to remove the case to federal court. That way, you get to play with a whole new set of shenanigans at a much higher level, but at least at that point, you can get some shots in. You can win a few points. You might even win your case. And if nothing else, you can delay it. But the point I'm trying to make here is right in this clause, it says, and this is so important to me with where I'm at currently winning cases in court, all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States. You would be astounded if you start reading some of the treaties that have been made, for example, the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, which is the big one right now, that basically covers everything that everybody on this call has been screwed by. And you can remove your case to federal court. Of course, we have the usual, the standard, which is violation of due process and denial of unalienable rights, of course. That's how you get the door open. You start writing the paperwork. But then you can hit them with a treaty violation. And this is serious stuff, my friends. And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is great. Heck, you know, just for jollies, it says in the damn Nuremberg Treaty that they can't microwave us. Well, you know, everywhere I turn my shotgun, I can hit a cell phone tower that's irradiating me with microwaves. You could sue every. You can take this to federal court if you had nothing else better to do under the Nuremberg Treaty, for Christ's sake. So my point is that if you're looking for a battle plan that you need immediately because you're in court and they're strangling and stomping on you at the moment, then remove the case to federal court, number one, and then go after them with a treaty violation. This is huge. And if nothing else, it will stall them, and they will hem and haw long enough for these arrests and indictments to have occurred and the restoration of our republic, because it is so close. And so that's a point I wanted to make about treaties. So, Nikki, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I do. If for anyone who is reading along, notice that the capital S, capital U, capital S for United States, and notice that the judges in every state, small s, okay, shall be bound thereby. Now, remember, most judges, if not all, are members of the bar, and members of the bar are pretty much all esquires. And what is the duty of an esquire but to protect their nobility? And I yield.
Okie dokie. All right, so Section 3. The senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution, but no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. And that was the section that I was looking for a moment ago. Nowhere does it say that we get to take an oath or affirmation. That's huge. I'm not going to get into that right now, but I want you to really put that in your brain, because that is incredibly huge. Okay, so now I'm going to move on to Article 7, and Article 7 has only one clause, and it's simply provided for the ratification of the Constitution. The ratification of the conventions of 9 states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. So they needed 9 out of 13. Done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states present, the 17th day of September in the year of our Lord, 1787, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 12th. in witness whereof, we have hereby, or here unto, subscribed our name.
Damn it! Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to end our presentation for
tonight.
Well,
wait a minute. I have something to say. May I?
This one's going to cost you $20. You got my mailing address.
Okay, I'll take it. Okay, notice that it's the ratification of the Convention of Nine Nobilities. You see that? States equals nobility in that era. And for the establishment of this Constitution between the states, meaning the people's normal state of being, according to how that was, or the Republic, I should say. Okay? So ratifying the same. So there you go. Watch the wording in these, and it really brings a lot to light on how we got where we are today. And I yield. Thank you, John. You're doing a great job.
Okie dokie. Okay, so you only have to pay me half for that last one. Okay.
Is that a getcha?
So next week we'll start in on the Bill of Rights. But for now, we've already talked about a lot of things that I think are incredibly hugely important that are little known, little discussed, little understood, and they're going to be a major player in 2018. So with that, I yield and open up the floor to any and everything you want to discuss.
I yield.
Hi, John.
Okay,
it's Jan.
I have a question.
Jan from Kansas.
About the lowercase s and the uppercase u and the uppercase s. So if you got a lowercase s, it equals essentially nobility.
I'm sorry? Say that
now,
again?
You're saying the lowercase s is basically equivalent to nobility?
No, lowercase is us. It's pretty much anybody. Everyone has a state of being. And in 1755, that's the way they looked at all states. Everyone has a state of being. The links are on that... are there in the comment section to go to the what do you call it, lesson 3. And when you go to lesson 3, you'll be able to, well, actually any of them, the dictionaries are on there. And just take a look at the dictionaries and find out what the words meant at the time these documents were penned. And also note that the earlier the version, probably the more accurate it is, because what I have noticed in going through this study on my own is that in later years, there's more capital S's than there were in the original documents. Okay?
So, I'll pay attention to that. So the uppercase S equals nobility?
Yes.
Uppercase S.
Okay. All right. All right, well then, okay. Well, here's a question that I have. Nikki, I have your phone number. We've spoken on the phone personally.
This is Eric? Eric?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. It's Eric.
Okay.
I was wondering, I'm trying to get some people to come and talk on this call. Patriots next door. I don't know if you ever watched these guys' videos.
You're breaking up. You're kind of fading in and out.
Okay, I am. I've been having that trouble on this call. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Can you hear me? Okay, so what I'm trying to do is see if I can get, I don't want to discuss it over the call, but if I could contact you and if it's okay with Captain John, I'd like to get Captain John's personal phone number from you and see if I can get him to come on to one of the phone calls that these couple of Patriots have. If that would be okay, Captain John, if I might get it.
Well, Captain John is going to have to give his permission to me, but I think he's somewhere on the site that you'd be able to find his phone number. And you don't have to. Yeah,
or you can email me. I mean, you know.
Okay.
Oh, you have that unique email, right? It's the I forget what it was.
Decape@hotmail.com.
Decape, that's it. Decape. Okay. All right. Yeah,
I'm going
I'll
to
do
explain
that.
Once again for those that are into sailboat racing. A decape is the 18 to 20 year old dumb know nothing that works up on the foredeck, forward of the mast, changing sails and doing the flying Zambini high wire act on a sailboat. That's a decade. The guys that have moderate experience, they work in the middle of the boat. And of course, us old foxes, we're in the cockpit telling everybody else what to do.
Okay,
so the decades were found at the pointy end.
So deckape at hotmail.com.
Correct.
Yeah,
which also has,
right,
which I will tell you, shows my Virgin Islands address.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you finished, Eric? Because I think Lori was next. Okay.
No.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
Jan from Kansas.
Hey, hello there. 20 on 6.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
The woman who wanted to speak?
Yeah.
Jan, Kansas.
Would that give me a receipt at all or not? Thank you. Thank you.
There was a woman who wanted to speak.
It was Jan from Kansas. I think it was Jan from Kansas.
Sounds like somebody's at the Walmart checkout line. Go ahead. We're waiting on you. Well, move on. Anybody else?
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you at the moment. Yep.
I'm having trouble with my phone, too, I guess.
Well, we're making our dear friends in the Alphabet Agencies are enjoying themselves tonight. Give them a round of applause.
No, I'm going to spit in their eye. I wanted to add something on to what Nikki was saying, but in the form of a question, and that was, wasn't the Articles of Confederation supposed to have a three-quarters of the members ratify it in order for it to be changed, and that would be 10 of the 13? And so then, but then, now I'm jumping around here because I don't know how to tie it together. But
you have no idea how dangerous a question you just opened up. I've been avoiding this entire subject for quite some time.
Yes,
I am only going to say for the moment, you are absolutely correct.
Okay, well, we can skip it from there if it opens up a can of worms.
And I will tell you that the reason that I take this position right now is because the Constitution as a document, regardless of all of what is involved, is an awesome document. And it is far more important that the people in this country and, in fact, on this planet learn the basic principles and tenets that were intended in this document. And that is far more important right now than what went right and what went wrong and what we're going to do about it. And so that's why I take that position currently. But I will, if you ask me a question, I will answer. You are correct. Nobody had the ratification numbers to change the Articles of Confederation. You are correct.
Okay, well, that's good enough. Thanks for the answer.
Uh-huh.
And it does say in the Articles of Confederation that document is perpetual.
That is
right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's as valid today as it ever was.
Right, and then the fact that it's also mentioned there in Article 6, you know, mm-hmm. to back up what they're trying to say in the Constitution, they use the, you know, Articles of Confederation or the Confederation to back up what they're doing, does to me also say that it's still
in effect, yeah.
necessary or, yeah, integrated into it. So, okay, thanks. I yield.
Yeah,
and
no,
that is
no,
incredibly
no.
crucial to the restoration of the Republic. This,
right.
again, is going to be very big in 2018. Very, very big.
And it's not only the Articles of Confederation, it's also the covenants entered into by our ancestors as well. So, and with that, I yield.
But that was a most awesome question. Thank you for that.
Yes, it was.
Next. Don't all rush at once. Hello?
Yeah, hello. This is Jim in New Mexico.
Jim in New Mexico. How you doing, dude?
Not too bad.
All right.
Little concern. Is Eric going to contact Nikki and John by telephone? That was garbled, and I couldn't hear all that. My point being that Eric contacted me several weeks ago by telephone, got my email address, and I've never been able to log into NLA since.
There's a reason I'm laughing with you, not at you. And I'll tell you that as soon as you get an answer to your question.
I was going to say to Eric, I was surprised that he didn't understand the relationship between capital U and capital S, United States, and corporate United States, thinking that that was us rather than that was the nobility. That surprised me.
Well, the story that I had is that from the day that I joined the NLA, I was using my Hotmail email. And for, a little over a year, maybe a year and a quarter or so, I got every notification from the NLA. I got my weekly email, and anytime anybody was sending anything out, it got there. And then, poof, one day, it just went away. It just went away. And I called up NLA National, and I'm not quite sure. I think I was dealing with Jan at the time. It was about 12 back, I don't remember. And I harped on them, and I had them look at their system and find out, what happened? Did you lose my email? Did it get corrupted in your system? Did somebody delete me? The usual. And, I was on their butts for quite a while, and I was pretty hard about it. And they're like, nah, man, everything looks good at this end. So then I'm talking to a couple of oath keepers, of which I'm also an oath keeper, and the oath keepers were saying, oh, my God, Hotmail? Nobody in the oath keepers gets any email from Hotmail. You got to be dumb to use Hotmail. So I switched it over to my AOL email, and it's been fine ever since. So that's the story. How are you?
Also, the bit about the Esquire and the title of nobility, that's banned under the Constitution for an officer to hold office who has a title of nobility, such as Esquire.
Well, you don't even have to get into that kind of detail. Rod Class exposed all of this, and I'm not going to go through all the iterations, but the simple truth of the matter is we handed everything over to the UN back in the 1945 International Organization of Immunities Act, and every public office is under them, and all public officials are foreign agents that are required to register with the State Department as foreign agents. And that's all that need be said. If you want to get into the nitty-gritty and the particulars of Esquire this and bar attorney that, great, wonderful, you're all correct. Bottom line is every public official of every public agency in the United States is an agent to a foreign corporation and needs to register as a foreign agent.
And if I could add to that, to help clarify, where you're going with the Esquire and things like that, is that Article 1, Section 10 says that nothing but gold and silver is to be used to tender payment of debt. And these guys, since 1965, legislators, they're not even getting paid with constitutional coin. They're getting paid with a foreign coin. So it is, that's just to take it a notch lower than what it is.
Yeah, under the Nixon, that's we lost our backing gold and silver with it when we lost the Kennedy brothers, that involvement, that conspiracy.
Right.
But
I laugh
then
with
we,
these.
Then the man who they helped get into the presidential office, Richard Nixon. My reading from 68 to 71 is one of the most important acts that they did was they. 68 to 71, they converted all states to corporations, thereby protecting them from what you just said, Article 1, Section 10, about states shall operate with, gold or silver, and that they weren't, and that they were scared to death that they'd be found out. So that came in that 68-71 conversion.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is everything they're doing absolutely legal according to the Constitution. You know,
well, it's legal to assassinate presidents, is it?
Oh, that's murder, and that's the Ten Commandments, and that's as good as gold under Article 6 as well. So,
no pun intended.
Yeah.
I have to laugh when these statutory gurus go file a claim in a statutory court, and then we'll say something to the effect that these statutory rules don't apply. Well, by virtue of the fact that you use the Federal Reserve notes to pay the filing fee, you've already given your consent to the jurisdiction, and they don't get it. I pay for all filings with postal money orders, which is backed by the French franc. That's not backed by fiat Federal Reserve note currency. U.S. postal money orders are backed by the French franc. So these statutory gurus, they talk out of both ends of their mouths at the same time, and I laugh. It is funny.
Let me address this Jim thing about not being able to get into his NLA account since talking to me. Jim, what are you saying there? I talked to Nikki before, and I don't think she had any trouble getting into her account after she spoke with me.
No, I haven't had any kind of problems with any of the stuff, like you said.
I'll contact Jan about it. So
yeah, and actually, Eric, bringing up someone to speak on these issues is very clarifying. What I've done is I've taken that the photo that I have online there, and I have made four to a page, and I've cut them up, and I carry them in my pocket. And anybody who seems like they're awake, I say, are you aware, that the states with the capital S means nobility? And when you're reading the documents, and then I point to the other side of that little sheet, and it's very tiny, so they have to put their glasses on, but it strikes their interest right away. And I point over to the other side where it says the small s state shall be, or is a republic, is a republic, not a monarchy. So there you go. It's an eye-opener. In fact, I gave it to our local sheriff today.
Oh, good for you. Nice.
And he perked up. He says, that's why we have solicitors. I said, and the solicitors are esquires, aren't they? And he got it right away.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was really neat. I mean, he's a homeboy, so it's these are his people too. He doesn't realize the power he has. Hopefully that woke him up. I yield.
Yo.
Me too.
Next. Going once.
This Jim again. Had an interesting conversation with a young 25-year-old chemical engineer. Was talking to him about the private Federal Reserve and the fact that what we've all learned from John about people who've had their homes seized by these mortgage companies under fraud, no fiduciary authority. And I was explaining to him, this ties in what you said earlier as you were reading about canceling debts, or whether or not when people seek freedom again and breaking their ties to get that liberty, oh, wait a minute, here come the Rothschilds, but you're still going to pay us, right? And point being was he did not get what I was trying to explain to him about when somebody goes out and buys a home applies to a bank for the loan and gets it, that is created out of thin air with basically $38 worth of ink and paper, and that then if that goes into default, that the bank really has no fiduciary authority because they have no investment other than if they are the Federal Reserve, the $38 for ink and paper costs. And that young man argued that point as a brilliant chemical engineer, and just to show how people are asleep, totally asleep, and will defend, you know, bad things to the nth degree. So I'll contact him about it again and see if he's understands it. It's amazing, though, that when you can explain it to him. And that goes into canceling debt, that Americans, if they would just wake up and realize how great the future could be by just, in my opinion, canceling the national deficit of, what is it, 18 trillion? Is it 17 trillion? Or is it 20 trillion?
Well, it's actually well over 100 trillion, but, you know, what's a couple of trillion among friends?
I was just going to say, or John's going to
have
a much higher figure.
Yeah, and I remind you that since the silver was taken out of the coin in 65, we have become the creditors. So
yeah,
they owe us.
I know, yeah. And,
well, Jim,
I tried to, I just tried to explain to this young chemical engineer with a very high IQ, 25 years old, that the government used to operate off the, if there was any interest off the money they created and distributed, that has been taken away from government operations, and therefore in 1913 they then needed to create the Internal Revenue Service to come up with a way to fund the operation of the government. How, you know, and he didn't get that either. It just once again, now go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to say, if you're specifically talking about the banks and no creating money out of thin air and mortgages, that's the Credit River decision. That, you don't need to tell anybody anything else. Tell them to go read the Credit River decision. It's the most famous case ever, and it is, as far as I know, the last common law court of record case in the United States, and that was in 92 in Minnesota. And I've entered that into several cases, but of course they just ignore it. But anyway, it's all there. It's all there. The Credit River decision is a famous case. It explains everything, and it is a common law court of record. So, you know,
say the title of that case a little slower. What is it?
Credit River decision.
Okay.
It's the most famous case ever, and it lays out the entire fraud. You know, the whole mortgage fraud thing would have never happened. Nobody would have ever been foreclosed on since 92 if it hadn't been buried. And it's on the net. It's not hard to find. I have several copies of it. But I'm not done. First of all, that was – so, Jim, if you have that guy, I respectfully suggest that you give him the Credit River decision and him look over it, because there's no hunky-dory, there's discussion, there's nothing. This was done by a jury in a federal court with a common law court of record. The guy's laid it all out in great detail. It's all in the public record, end of story. But the other thing is, we were talking, I raised the issue of using U.S. postal money orders as French, because they're backed by French francs. And then this led me to start thinking about houses and mortgages and then allodial title. You know, you're going to have to fight this fight, but understand, if I was to go buy a house or a car or a boat, I don't give a flying fatuity what it is, and I pay you in gold and silver, or silver, or gold, who cares, anything but a fiat currency. I pay you in diamonds. It doesn't really matter. And I do the legal thing. I have six or seven of my closest friends who witnessed the purchase put an affidavit together that said that they witnessed this purchase. And it was done between these two parties for this amount in this type of payment. And then you run that legal ad in your local legal ad paper for 3 weeks. You're done. You own that frickin' boat or car or house outright. And nobody can ever take it from you. They can't ask you to register it. They can't talk about, well, it was registered before. They can't put it on the tax roll. They can't do nothing and those that have understood this clearly and were willing to take that fight, and granted, this fight had to have been taken up before we got close to transition because, as we well know, they just shut everything down about a year and a half, 2 years ago. That's what happened. They own their car. They own their house. They own their boat. It is not on the tax rolls. They do not have it registered. There is no licenses. There's not a damn thing that they can do about it. And that's the point I was going to make, and with that, I yield.
Wasn't the Credit River case overturned on appeal? That's a Jerome Daly case.
Never.
No?
No, they killed the judge 6 months later, and they basically threw everybody in jail that tried to bring it up since then.
Okay. Jerome Daly, he was a lawyer on that, wasn't it?
I don't recall.
To you?
I'd have to. Okay. No, at the moment, I would have to look at it.
Okay. I just thought, I was familiar with the case. I think that was his name. But anyway, I appreciate it.
Okay.
And what I was going to suggest to the gentleman who was talking before and brought this subject up is that to look into your local municipalities for the, what do they call that, municipal authorities, and see if there is an act in your state for municipal authorities, or any authority for that matter, to be able to create revenue bonds. Or to, you know, authorize, get revenue bonds authorized, because the revenue bonds go to the bank and then the bank monetizes them through the Federal Reserve System for the pennies on the dollar. Somebody is collecting the interest right off the bat, you know, for, if, what is it, 5 cents to print a note, a dollar note. And so 95 cents is going right into someone's pocket. And the interest on that is supposed to be put back into the funds, the sinking fund in your municipal, your municipality, in order to pay for the improvements that need to be done in that municipality. Somebody... I don't know if it was really working the way it was intended back in the 30s when they set these things up, the municipal authorities up, to be run by good guys. We would probably have to pay a tax one time and never pay it again because the bonds never go away according to how it was set up in the 1930s. And there's documentation to show that.
I had a question that you reminded me of something, and that's all great information, and well, I sure hope we get to see it come to pass. But I brought this up before in the Monday night call, and John DeRash, he mentioned how Tom Jefferson floated this idea. And if what you're saying about, of course, the judges being beholden to the state or even the crown, to me it seems quite clear that we have more, I've said this before, again, we have more than enough information and historical fact or truth that being a judge, in my opinion, is too much power for a man to handle. Now, you could be a magistrate, but I personally think, I don't know what, you know, Captain John has some ideas about what's going to happen, but I personally think we shouldn't have judges anymore. It's too much power for one man. I just think man's too frail. I mean, it's obvious it's part of, you know, we're unregenerate. It's too much power for a man to have. And I just want to know if you think there's substantial backing for this idea, and what do you both think about it?
Well, one of my concerns has been, you know, in the future, when we're tasked with restoring the judiciary, what it's going to look like. Nikki, tell them the name of the book where the guys already thought that all up.
Say that again about the judiciary?
The common law book that was written by the guy who figured out how to set up the judiciary and how it's supposed to be run, that 300-page book.
That's actually, we talked about that way back when, and that was, oh, I'm trying to think of what, Roberts? I believe it was Roberts.
I can't find your, I know you sent it to me and I can't find it, but that's the answer. That's the answer to this gentleman's question.
Oh, no, not Rob. It's actually on the site. If you go to the COS in the comment section, and it was
it is there.
Yeah, it was in the first couple of calls that we did.
So go back around April, May-ish in the Committee of Safety tab chat, you will find this book that I am referring to, where this guy already covered all of that from soup to nuts. Well, what if we actually did have the Republic set up the way it was supposed to be? And what if we actually did have a common law system? Then what would judges do? And how would juries be guided? And how should the process occur? And this, that's the answer to your question. It's all in there.
Right.
So
that's where if we have an operational constitution and common law, a judge has very limited powers. If you ask for a jury, then the jury makes all the decisions. Judge has no summary judgment. If you decline to ask for a jury,
you understand these are all hollow platitudes when your organization has said, okay, fix the judiciary. You can't hang these plaques all up and down the wall and expect it to happen. Somebody had to do a soup to nuts operations manual on how this is going to be done, and that's what's in this book.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's back in April.
Any keywords? Any keywords for this title?
I'm looking now so that George Edwards. Okay, it is a follow up. If you type in purpose and convening of grand juries,
that's it.
You got it. And as mentioned during the, it was six. Okay, well, George Edwards' 1906 essay on the grand jury. And there is, there was some others too. It wasn't just him. There was a couple of more, I think, that I had brought up during that period of time. And off the top of my head, I'm not remembering what it is. But Robert, or what did I just say? Whoever
George,
I just
George
said,
Edwards.
He's the guy. Edwards.
Perfect.
Edwards.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
He is the man. Yes.
So, if you want an answer to what the hell the NLA is supposed to do about restoring the judiciary, read the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody's already figured it out. We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Love it. Love it. That's great.
Me
Thank
too.
You.
You have no idea how much I love it. You have no idea.
Yeah, and what's so cool about the grand jury in our court system is that if we look at the Bundy trials, we can see that even when it was purposely trying to be messed up, it still worked. They tried over and over and over and over to mess up the system that we have for us, you know, of a jury, and they really didn't get the job done. I mean, it is such a good system. It's really, it's a beautiful thing, you know, that we have.
Yeah. Well, it, you know, again, what is this thing that we call common law and common law grand juries? Look, it's cosmic law. It's service to others. It's common sense. It's according to natural laws. It's the way Source created everything. If you're in alignment with Source, how wrong can you be? You don't have to get real technical about any of this. That's why I'm just going to say this. I am in the process right now. I've been sitting on a lot of paperwork from cases where I've been screwed. Nobody's forgiven. Nobody's forgotten. Nobody walks away. It may take me 12 years, but I'll nail your ass. And now is the time to start getting that paperwork together. I've sent out affidavits. I have defaults on affidavits. I've got, you know, warnings that you've already defaulted. I'm writing up I've written up all the documents. Now's the time to start pushing these pricks because in very short order, the courts are going to be in this common law perspective. And it's going to be a slam dunk. I'm going to walk into court. I asked for $270 million from Bank of America, Freddie Mac, NationStar, a few other odds and ends. You've all admitted you're guilty in your unrebutted affidavits, and I'm going to walk out of there an hour later with $270 million, and they're going to have to pay me tomorrow. That's the common law court system. It's going to be that easy. And my point is I want my paperwork in the court system at the front of the line, because tens and hundreds of millions of cases are going to be filed after this transition, and I want to get to these pricks while they still got some money in the piggy bank. And I'm telling you to do the same. Now's the time to play the game. Now's the time to resurrect all of those old cases we got screwed on, that you know you got screwed on. Now's the time to get your paperwork ready to throw in to the court to file. Get it going. Don't let them get away. Don't walk away. Don't forget about it. Don't go, oh, I can't get anything done. We're on that. We're already in the new paradigm. Get your paperwork ready. Get in the front of the line. I'm telling you.
And going back to some of the things that were posted in the COS site in the comment section, there's systemic tips for changing a populated system. And in there is conflict resolution strategies for transition. Okay, there's slides to go along with this, and you don't have to listen to me, but there's slides there that you can go ahead and just kind of read from. And all the information is there. And then there is another one, skills building for mediators and how to ask questions. Okay, these two things would be very, very helpful, or will be very, very helpful for transitioning.
You know, and I'm going to turn this, I'm going to refocus all of this, as I always do, to committees of safety. Everything that we just talked about in the last half hour is related directly to committees of safety. If you don't understand it, let me rephrase it so that you do understand it. So you live in Vermilion County of Illinois. You know the county is corrupt. You know they screwed you on taxes. And you know they have a CAFR account worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Get your paperwork together now. Get it ready to go to submit to get that money back from your CAFR account to redistribute to the people of your county led by your committee of safety. That's what these committees of safety are for. That's what taking back your county is all about. This is how it's done. I just now happen to be talking about the money. Getting the money back. But these are what committees of safety can do. There's nothing stopping a committee of safety from filing on behalf of the people of Vermilion County to get back all the fraudulent, the extorted money that has been taken from them over the last couple of decades. What's stopping you? Nothing. Committees of safety are supposed to do that. That's taking back your county. So I wanted to turn that around and refocus it so you understand we're not off on some tangent here. These are tools that I keep giving you guys for your committees of safety or for using that as an introduction to start up a committee of safety. Well, maybe you're in an area that's a college town. You're around the U of I or the University of Indiana or Notre Dame. You got a bunch of smart, educated people. Hey, this is the kind of thing they like. You know, we often talk about the hayseeds out in the rural. What about the intellectuals? What about the highly educated? That's the kind of thing they're interested in, because they're the ones that are paid. Those are the ones that are getting extorted the most, and everybody knows you vote with your pocketbook. So there are different ways to look at things, but it all boils down to committees of safety, and that's my point. So I yield.
Hey, John, I was looking at something on Wikipedia about the Credit River case, and it says here in the result, it says that the decision was ultimately nullified on the ground that a justice of the peace did not have the power to make such a ruling. I wonder if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, he wasn't a justice of the peace. He was a federal freaking judge. So much for Wikipedia.
Okay.
He was a federal judge.
No, I'm always skeptical of anything in Wikipedia, but I would.
Yeah, well, you just
I remember reading about that.
That's a lightning quick bust right there. That is not even remotely close to true.
Okay.
Not even remotely close.
I yield.
Okay.
Excellent call.
Thank you, Robert.
That was from our paid cheerleading section.
And now,
okay, see, I don't owe you anything now.
And now my stomach says it's supper time.
All righty, folks. So
sleeping time.
Next week we will pick up on the Bill of Rights unless something epic happens and I change my mind. All right, guys. Have a good night. Get off my phone.